Hello and welcome to another edition of the Tigers Down Under. I'm your host, Alex, and with me I have Logan. How are you, Logan?
Yeah, good evening, Alex. Mate, I'm doing pretty well. It's a very interesting time period. I feel like we are holding on by the skin of our teeth, perhaps. I know that that's the optimistic approach, but some people would already have written the season off, but I feel like I'm sitting somewhere in between.
Yeah, I think we talked, we did that flashback episode and we sort of alluded to the fact that I think that loss to Stoke, I think at the time we hadn't played them yet, but we thought if we lost to Stoke, the season might fizzle out. You know, it'll be hard to get the interest or the motivation to keep the podcast running. And it feels like City are just sort of hanging in there, that they're keeping the season interesting. I think I said during the week, I think so long as we can go to Plymouth on that last day of the season, mathematically in with a chance of the playoffs, I think that's got to be the goal at the moment. And we're certainly doing our best to do that. I mean, we'll talk the Borough game first, but we could have done better. We could have held on for the win in that one after going 2-1 up, after finding ourselves 1-0 down. Felt very much a carbon copy of that first game against them in some ways. Latte Lath scoring quite early on and then us fighting back to go up 2-1. Except for this time, we couldn't hang on for the 2-1 victory, drawing 2-2 after Finazaz got the equaliser. I guess, thinking about the game in general, what did you make of that fixture, and were you frustrated to have dropped the 2 points, or were you happy to see the fight back and the style of play, I suppose?
Yeah, look, I want to say that I'm frustrated purely on the premise that we led 2-1, and I guess if you hold on, the playoff picture or the slim chances of, the playoffs that still kind of exist, leave a lot more reason to be optimistic. And I guess it was just kind of, it was one of those games that, as you mentioned, Borough getting the early goal, it was one of those kind of games that there was really clear momentum shifts. It kind of ebbed and flowed. And look, after leading, I did think when Seri scored that second goal that, we were every chance of going on and holding on. But when they equalised, it kind of felt to me like it was, somewhat the final nail in the coffin for the season. But the game itself I thought was promising. I think if, the importance of it wasn't as high and it came earlier in the season, we probably would have been, reasonably happy to take a point, given the fact that Borough have been in quite good form. And also our home form has just been so dreadful that, it would have been one of those games that you comfortably took and said, good result. I think the fact that it's happened so late in the season and we did lead probably leaves a lot more to the imagination and probably leaves me feeling a little bit more disappointed than what I could have hoped.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think you look at the performance and the result and you think it's a positive performance and it's a reasonable result, but it's just the wrong time of the season to get a result like that. I couldn't help but feel like there was a little bit of irony in the fact that we did concede that equaliser when basically, Morton's up the other end about to pull the trigger on a shot and we get dispossessed and they tear down the other end and score. And you think it's one of those few occasions where we've actually, sort of committed bodies forward. We're looking to attack. We're looking to score a goal and we're getting hit on the counter, when one of the big criticisms has been we've, shut up shop. We've sat back. We haven't gone for that third goal. And then we've, like against Birmingham, and then we've conceded. And so there was a certain irony in the fact that it was almost the opposite on this occasion, that it was, in going for that third goal that we actually conceded. I guess Giles was copping a bit of criticism for his positioning in that goal. Players getting criticised for not taking one for the team and drawing a yellow card. How did you see that equaliser?
Yeah, look, it was a frustrating one, as you mentioned, because of the fact that Morton probably could have pulled the trigger. I think if he was to, see that one over again straight after the game, I'm sure he's watched it a few times, but if he had pulled the trigger and, the shot went wide or hit the target and there was a save, well, we weren't really susceptible to the counter. I personally think that Giles was probably injured. I think that he, was a little bit underdone in playing that game. And so he just looked a little bit out of sorts. I've been reasonably impressed with Giles since he arrived, and I don't think he's really let anyone down. And so, I definitely think that he probably was at fault in some ways, but the real play was the turnover, from Morton. I guess, you can make pretty good case that they've still gone 90 meters essentially to, you know, to find a shot and get it past for the equalizer. But combination of just kind of sloppy turn from Morton mixed in with what I believe was Giles was, you know, somewhat injured, was probably the reason for the equaliser.
And earlier in the game, you sort of touched on already the Seri goal, but even earlier than that, Philogene with the cross that sort of deceived everyone. I think Tufan tried to claim that he got a touch on it, but it's so hard to tell from replays. It looks like it's Philogene's goal. 10, we'll talk QPR in a second where he scored his 11th, but at that point in time, 10th goal for the season, a really sort of stellar return for Philogene in his first season with the club. I think I was having this discussion the other day. I was looking at the stats compared to Bowen's first season with us, for instance. I think he's basically on track to match Bowen's tally at the same age. So it's just quietly quite an impressive season from him.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, that's kind of one of the things that has been, there's been a lot of contentious talk about, with the fact that City haven't been playing with an out and out number nine, and we don't have that 15 goal a season kind of striker. But when you look at that leaderboard, and granted Delap has been injured for a significant period, when you see the amount of goal scorers who are either in double figures or very close to, it's quite an impressive attacking onslaught. And certainly he he's one of the players who has proven time and time again that not only is he an attacking threat as far as the goals go, but he also contributes with assist. He just looks lively every time he touches it.
Yeah, and Seri with his second for the club, wasn't destined to be a second, winner in a 2-1 fixture. But, irony in this goal as well, being that we've sort of closed them down from passing out from the back, and Seri's latched onto it and put it in the top corner. I saw the comment that maybe the reason it was such a deadly finish from Seri, but you think because he's so close in, that's why it latches into the top corner, because if he's any further out, it's probably going to go into the stands, because as with a lot of his shots, he seems to hit them over the crossbar. But I think because he's so close, it actually manages to go in.
Absolutely. His technique didn't change. And just the fact that he popped up so close to the goal. I absolutely agree with that. And it was great to see, Seri get on the score sheet.
Yeah, and we'll go through our votes then before we go into QPR. I gave man of the match to Omer. I thought he was terrific again. It was his, his pressing and harrying of the opposition. I think he got player of the month for March as well. I think he's been super impressive since he's come into the starting 11. His link-up play with Tufan is awesome to see, and his energy across the pitch. Recovery of the ball, driving us forward. I think he's one of the real keys in this sort of higher tempo of passing and play that we've had in the last few games, where he just, whenever he picks up the ball, he's intent on driving it forward, which is really impressive. I went Seri for the two votes, for that goal, and then also just looked really impressive through the middle, controlling the play as he always does. And then Tufan for the one. Didn't end up getting credited with the goal. But again, another terrific display from him up front. His pressing and work rate is really impressive.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't really argue with that. I probably had Tufan as two and Seri as one, but I certainly thought that Umar was the standout. And look, as you said, every time Umar seems to touch the ball, he's kind of got that that desire to get forward and drive. But he just looks really silky. I know that the comparisons to Messi, I can see, although albeit an extravagant one, I can see what, people are trying to say. Yeah. It's the control with the ball at his feet, and he just looks incredibly smooth in the way he moves, and it's a great sight to see him going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And a great sight was the victory against QPR on the weekend, 3-0 win, really comfortable. And I think it was the first goal, the first win by more than a goal at the MKM since we beat Cardiff back in December, which was great to see. Good to really put aside to the sword. I guess the frustration is that we haven't done it earlier against a Stoke or a Swansea or sides like that when we were a bit more comfortably in the playoff picture. You kind of get that feeling that it's maybe a little bit too little too late. But all the same, finishing the season off strongly, finishing the season off with a couple of home wins, Carvalho on the score sheet again, Philogene on the score sheet again, and of course Tufan with the goal of the season contender for the opener.
Yeah, and I think the frustrating one thing that you mentioned, although it has been a poor patch of home form, I think it was QPR that we played back into form earlier in the season as well, when they were well and truly struggling, languishing in the, I think it was in the relegation zone at the time that we played them back then too. And so, yeah, really disappointing that, you know, to see a performance that was so, as you said, like overwhelming. They really didn't look in the game at any real stage. And I think that we were just so dominant. It's kind of the performance that I think is probably fair to say that we have expected, you know, City to produce at home against, as you say, the lesser sides. And the fact that it hasn't been there and, you know, we're now talking about a 6-point gap, it's a real bitter pill to swallow because, you know, if you do win those fixtures or take 3 points out of even one of those, you know, the playoff picture looks very different at the moment. But was a very professional performance and one that at long last gave the home fans something to be very excited about after, you know, some pretty disappointing results.
Yeah, and I guess the silver lining for me is I look at Philogene, Tufan, Ermer, Slater even, and they're all permanent players who will be here next season, you know, maybe not Philogene, which we'll discuss a little bit later, but Carvalho aside, a lot of those contributions are coming from permanent signings. So the hope would be, I guess, that these players are sort of settling in, they're getting into a great rhythm with each other, and that will kick on next season. And if we are to miss the playoffs, that at least we're setting a really solid foundation for next season. But in the here and now, we are still putting that pressure on Norwich. It was really frustrating to see them get that win against Preston right at the end of that fixture, which would have, if not, you know, would have closed the gap considerably for us. But Carvalho, what is it, 8 goals now for him in 10 or 12 games, I think, as well. So he's having, you know, you talked then about, I guess, our top goal scorers and where they're sitting in the goal charts. And he's overtaken Delap, I think, which is quite remarkable in you know, 10 or so less games. So he's seemingly loving life here and really contributing well. And, you know, even if you do look one eye on next season and you think Carvalho won't be here, the results of him playing as well as he has will be that those big clubs will trust us to send those sorts of players to us if the need arises.
Yeah, you beat me to the punch. He was someone who, you know, I guess it's obvious that, you know, we can say, oh, I wanted to give Carvalho a rap. But let's not forget that when he first, arrived at City, there was a very high expectation because of the, you know, I guess the caliber of player that, you know, he is. And he was somewhat slow to get started. I know that I read a lot of negative online comments about him diving all over the place and, you know, not physically looking like he wanted to be there. And I just think, you know, it's a real sign of a player of that caliber to what they can do once they get minutes under their belt and be playing in a system that not only suits them, but, you know, he obviously seems to have developed a pretty good chemistry. I really trust Rescinia, and as you said, he's talked at length about how much he enjoys his football at the moment. It's remarkable that when I saw the stats for the amount of goals that he scored, and as you said, in 10 games or whatever it is, it's certainly has been a huge impact. So full credit to him, and as you say, I think that is the silver lining. If he isn't there, isn't with us next season, which in all likelihood it probably appears, you know, that will be the case. He really has, you know, left a very strong imprint on any Premier League club that does want to send players out on loan, that City is a very healthy landing ground for them. And that's a great win in regards to looking at it from our perspective.
Yeah, no doubt. And look, we do have to talk about that Tufan goal, open the goal scoring. Picks up on the edge of the box, cracks it, you know, curls it in top corner. As the club pointed out as well, it's not even just the goal, it's the, you know, the passing movement that leads up to it. I think it was 30 passes or something they said leading up to that goal, which I feel like the club is definitely quite deliberately in recent weeks. It's a direct response or direct sort of demonstration to the supporters of the strengths of Rescinia's style of play, and it's a valid point to make. And then, yeah, Tufan said to finish it off.
Oh, absolutely. It was a stunning finish. And I think it had had shades of the Giovanni, screamer, purely from the angle that he approaches. When you dribble, like, kind of across the box in the way that he did, and then to have the whip, and I guess the fact that it had the dip on it as well, to sneak under there. And I think it may have even clipped the...
I love those ones. It clips the crossbar and goes, yeah.
Yeah, it was just remarkable. And he's another one who, with all due respect, has looked out of shape at times, since you're right, to see the form that he's in now. And the fact that he's also been managed, he'd spent a fair bit of time on the bench in, the last kind of 6 weeks as well, is, again, another testament to him. It seems like he's playing without an ego. And when he does come into the fold, he's having a huge impact on games. I do tend to agree with you with the way that the club are very much overtly supporting the Rescindia philosophy. And I did think about that, but it probably to me speaks more towards kind of a healthy club position at the moment. It really does kind of speak into that fold that if, like, I want to say, like, the marketing people and the, city publicists, if they're willing to kind of write positively of the way the manager is playing, and, well, the way the manager's setting up his teams to play, and then the way that we're executing, I think it probably shows that it's not just a case of, like, a few people around the club are kind of happy. It shows a very united club, and that very much is what, we kind of read and see when you hear, Kessler talk, and when Ajun has any time behind the mic, and when the players are interviewed. Everything does seem to be, that everyone's pulling in the same direction and seems to be enjoying their time. So I'm really positive in my reflection on that, because I don't really think that that's something that we've seen. Maybe there was periods of it under Bruce, but I always remember there was tones of, people not liking Bruce's defensive play. And I guess there's still a lot of crying out for, City fans that don't like City playing out from the back in the way that Rescindia has us playing. And you're never going to please everyone, but what it does to me prove is that the club as a whole seem to be committed to the philosophy, and that's a great thing.
Yeah, and I think from the outside looking in, for players, for whoever, it's got to be a club that's really on the up, because you look at the owner, you look at the manager, you look at everyone very much united, pulling in the same direction, wanting the same thing. The owner, putting the money where his mouth is and really supporting the manager with his ambitions. So, again, it's got to be a real credit in the bank for the summer transfer window when we're trying to get players across the line. You think 2 years ago or whenever, when we were trying to bring in Seri, and it was quite a battle to bring him in. And to be perfectly honest, I'm sure we basically had to pay him a bit of extra money to convince him to come because there's a lot, talk's cheap, and a lot of players would have looked at the club and thought, you've just finished 19th or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I really believe that, your ambition's really there. And then you fast forward 2 years, we're on the brink of the playoffs. We've got a young manager who plays attractive football, players that are developing really well under him. It's got to be a huge attraction to players coming in and, younger and older players. I mean, that point you make about Tufan and his fitness levels, and you think, he's really developed and improved under Rescindia. Same with Louis Coyle. Louis Coyle, who looked to be on the outer last season, has really stepped up again this season. So it's not just the younger players who are improving and really gelling in the system. It's the older players as well. So, you'd like to think in the off-season, if we are recruiting whoever it might be, that there's a real desire to actually come and be part of the project, which is a really exciting thing for the club.
Yep, I couldn't agree more. And I think that is just, regardless of what happens in the, in the final few games, I think it really already highlights a sense of optimism about next season. And that's, a position that we haven't really been in recent times. I think last season there was a real, air of kind of optimism. And that's because they'd, spoken so positively about signings and, but the fact now that we're really running on proof, we've seen, what the chairman says he's going to do has been supported financially, and the players are all speaking positively. It's like, well, this is exactly what we want to see. And if we do miss out on the playoffs, you would be very much having a very interesting, pre-season conversation about what our expectations are, because anything short of playoffs, would not really suffice given the season that we've had.
Oh, no doubt. And I think judging by the caliber of teams coming down, I think automatics should really be the aim next season, with playoffs basically like a consolation prize if we weren't to make the automatic spots. But certainly I think that would be a good spot to be in. Last thing on this game, that second goal, really perfectly weighted ball over the top from Tufan to Carvalho to finish in the back of the net, but really started by Omer picking the ball up from the sideline and driving it forward. You know, sort of said with the Middlesbrough game, but his drive and desire to push forward really opened up a lot of space. And it is interesting that we've seen the last few games in particular, there's a lot more urgency or a lot more desire to get forward. And I think it's probably partly Omer coming in. It's probably partly, you know, we're backs against the walls. We've just got to go for it. And it's maybe partly Rossini looking at games like Stoke and thinking, I have had to, you know, up the tempo a little bit. And I think it's sort of a perfect melting pot of all of these elements coming together, which is really, we're seeing goals like that the second goal against QPR, which is very reminiscent of that. I think it was also the second goal against Cardiff, which was that great passing move for Carvalho. So we're seeing these brilliant sort of well-worked sort of set plays almost coming off.
Well, it speaks to sticking to a coaching philosophy as opposed to just going out and hoping, which I think is, you know, what we've been accustomed to. And so it's no surprise when Rossini bangs the drum about, you know, what he expects from the players and how they want to play. You know, we're not just going away from the system because, you know, there is mistakes in it, there is flaws, and we've, you know, it's probably cost us points at times. But as you mentioned, when you're seeing myriad goals in different games through the same playing style, well, then I think the proof's in the pudding that as we get better at implementing that playing style, then you'd hope that the, you know, the goals and the results kind of flow on from there. And I think that's a, you know, a credit to the fact that Rossini has the stones to, as a manager, to, you know, be brazen enough to keep playing that style and not going away from it, because I think it would be really easy to abandon that when you've, you know, had a few poor results or a few pretty critical turnovers that have resulted in goals and fans are jumping down your throat. But it is so much more about the long-term plan, and I think that's, you know, that's a credit to him.
Yeah, and last but not least, we can't finish off this game without touching on Liam Delap making his long-awaited return from injury. Looked fantastic, you know, standing ovation with him coming onto the pitch. Almost scored, almost set up a goal. It was really frustrating, actually, because early on, I think it was just after we'd scored the first goal, the amount of balls that were fizzing across the box from Philogene and others, where you just think if you just have a Delap on the end of those to tap those in, we could have been 4, 5, 6 goals clear at halftime. So I'm sure he was licking his lips sitting in the stands waiting to come on. And unfortunately, he wasn't able to sort of cap off a perfect day with a goal on his return. But look, he looked like he'd never been away. Like he looked, you know, ready to go, full of fitness. And I have no doubt that he'd be looking to start the game against Watford if he can.
Absolutely. And it was probably one of the most welcome sights to, you know, to hear that he was available and then to see him again. And as you said, he didn't really, you know, skip a beat in what we were able to see of him. But, oh, man, I think I speak for many people when I say that really is a signing. If there's anything that we can do to, you know, to pull that off and get him here, potentially on another loan spell, but maybe even permanent, it would be a remarkable coup because he is just a, you know, fantastic player and really something so different for, you know, for a City player that is not like just offensive minded, but really throws himself around and just seems to have this work rate that is unmatched. And it's, you know, it's a pleasure to see him back on the pitch. And I really do hope for his sake that he's able to make some kind of impact in the final few weeks for many reasons, but particularly for him personally, given what he's had to endure.
Yeah, no doubt. For the votes for this one, I couldn't go past Tufan for the 3, the goal and the assist, another terrific display from him. Philogene for the 2, I thought his goal in the second half was really well controlled, really well worked, and I thought his work rate throughout the game was really great. I think he's had a little bit of a dip in form previously over the last few weeks, but then with the goal against the Middlesbrough goal and the QPR goal now as well, I think he's really back up and firing on all cylinders. And then I went Omer for the 1 again. I thought he was had another terrific game.
Yeah, I think that you've nailed it. I would have absolutely matched those 3-2-1s. And, yeah, like, you know, special mention to to Philogene as well, because I do feel like it is one of the most common kind of, you know, thing. It's death taxes and Philogene getting a vote in the 3-2-1s.
Absolutely. Look, we'll talk more about that man himself now with Philogene. We're doing another one of our little player reviews for the season. Signed just in the summer for £5 million. Really highly rated at Villa. And I think at the time it was very much speculated that he'd be coming here on loan. And so when we got the news that we're actually signing him permanently on a £5 million deal, it was seen as quite a coup. And it's really been repaid already. I mean, I think it was probably after 6 months we were sort of talking about him being worth sort of 3-5 times worth what we paid for him. And, you know, he's sitting there now on 11 goals, 6 assists just from the 28 appearances after that sort of injury mid-season. I actually forgot, I was looking it up for this segment. I was looking it up. He's on a 3-year deal with a club option for an extra year. So we've got a 4-year deal on him. So he'll have 3 years remaining in the summer. Puts us in a very strong negotiating position. I think it's an interesting one because, you know, all the machinations of FFP and whether we need to sell in order to buy or whatever it might be probably weakens the position a little bit because clubs might know that we need to sell. First of all, thoughts on Philogene as a player for City this season?
I feel like I've telegraphed my thoughts on him from the previous thing. But I look, for his age, I think he has been a remarkable prospect that I do genuinely believe it's incredible the deal and the business that was able to get done to be able to buy him from Villa. As you said, it's a purchase, it's not a loan, and we are in a hugely promising, you know, bargaining position, because I do believe the amount of suitors given what he's done in the Championship this season would be, you know, there'd be a long list. But I do think if we want to kind of, you know, speak truthfully about him, there is the criticism that sometimes there is, you know, that too much flair without kind of trying to hone that end product, which I do think that, you know, you're likely to see with anyone of that age regardless. But the fact that he's not only been able to, you know, be signed by a Premier League club to then come across to Hull to have the impact in the Championship and the you know, the role that he's played in the England under-23s as well. He's just an incredible prospect, and I'm really excited to see, you know, where he ends up development-wise anyway. But it is a very, a very good thing for us, the fact that he, you know, appears to love his football at City, and the fact that he, you know, he signed for, you know, debatably 4 years. I know there's the buyback clause and, you know, there's a couple of interesting tweaks in his contract, like you said, that will kind of, you know, need to be looked at. But certainly a player that would be looking to hold on to and are in a strong position to be able to, at the very least. We're going to recoup an incredible fee back for him, because you're not going to sell a player who has that much proven impact at that age for cheap. And that's a great thing for us.
Yeah, it's going to be a fascinating summer, because I think it's between him and Greaves and what business we do in that respect. And I think there's sort of pros and cons to selling or pros and cons to keeping each of them. I mean, I think I'd personally rather keep Greaves because of the connection to the club. But then, as you say, you also, you know, goals are expensive in the Championship. It's hard to get proven goal scorers. So if you've got a Philogene on the books who can create and score as many goals as he does, you don't want to sell them on the cheap. So it's going to be an interesting summer to see what we do. I think Philogene is an ambitious player who wants to test himself, but I think, as you quite rightly say, I think there's a lot of development he can still do at this level. And I think learning when to pull the trigger, when to pass the ball, when to have a take a shot, and when to hold on to the ball as he tends to do, is still something I think he could develop a lot better. I think, you know, you want your forwards to be greedy, but I think at times he's a bit too greedy. We saw against Rotherham that Rabona came off, luckily, but you think if that doesn't come off, it's a very different conversation. You look at the Swansea game where he was taking a lot of shots with no end product as well. So I think there's examples where he's still got a lot of development, but if a Premier League club comes in 25, 30, 35 million offer, I think it makes it a very difficult conversation. Well, maybe makes it a very easy conversation for us to have in terms of whether we keep him, but it makes it very difficult to justify keeping hold of him, I think.
Yeah, and anything that, you know, offers that much of a fee in the Championship, you absolutely have to look at. But It's just, yeah, like we said, it is one of those things that if you think about what we paid for him and the potential that we can, you know, recoup at the very least, it's incredible business. And I would, you know, argue a pretty good point that if he was to move on, I can't really see it being for another championship club. I'd be really surprised if that was the case. He would certainly be looking up, and with that would come, you know, a handsome transfer fee. So it's a win-win.
Yeah, for sure. I'd think it'd be sort of, you know, a Newcastle or a West Ham, a Villa, you know, Villa wanted to get him back, or Spurs maybe, that sort of caliber of club potentially. Yeah. But we shall see what happens in the summer. Look, fingers crossed my Wi-Fi holds out here. It has been a bit patchy today, so bear with me if it does cut out again. But we'll round things off with that preview of the Watford game. Tom Cleverley's in charge there following Ishmael's departure a couple of weeks ago, which really starts to make you feel old. I mean, obviously, we watched Rossini play for City, so we've got a few former players that we're quite familiar with managing already. But, you know, Tom Cleverley, having only retired last year, certainly feels like a player who's far too young to be already in football management. But, you know, five games without a loss. They've lost their most recent game against Southampton now, but a win and four draws to start his managerial spell there, quite impressive. A Watford side that really don't have a whole lot to play for, though. So it will be interesting to see how they line up against us. And it's, you know, a couple of weeks ago, you'd probably look at this game and think this is almost our easiest of our remaining games because we're either playing relegation battlers or promotion chasers other than this. But they're proving to be a tough cookie to crack at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you often see that with teams that have a new kind of management. And I guess, we've been in a similar position towards the end of the season where there's a lot of debate of, you know, what's there to play for. But I do think that there'd be players, you know, in that Watford side who obviously, you know, do have a lot to play for as far as, you know, contracts for next season and wanting to be put in the shop window and all that kind of stuff. So there is always motive in any championship game. I think this one for me is so much more about, you know, what City want to do with it. It's very much, have they kind of written themselves off, or are they even going to go out and just play without fear? Because in some ways, you know, they kind of think, oh, well, it's over. I mean, I don't think that that's necessarily the approach that they will have, but sometimes there is a kind of freeing element of that where you can just say, look, you know, we can kind of, you know, throw caution to the wind that there's every chance that, you know, we're not going to be able to bridge that gap anyway. So we're going to go and play with freedom. And sometimes that actually works for you. So I'm really interested to see this fixture purely based on the fact that it appears that it doesn't really have, you know, all that much in it, albeit the slightest glimmer of hope. But with that being said, you know, you win this game and results don't go Norwich's way, it sets up a fascinating, run to the final day. So I think everyone will be watching, fingers crossed, and, you know, hoping for the very best. It very much does, you know, matter what happens in Norwich's game. But another 3 points here and points dropped, and it's going to be a very, very interesting prospect.
Well, the interesting thing as well is we haven't really talked about them yet, but it's not even just Norwich that we could be looking out for, but also West Brom, because West Brom only a point ahead of Norwich now. We've got the game in hand on them as well. They face Leicester as the early game this weekend. Norwich do have Bristol City as well, and Bristol City have been quite strong against, you know, these stronger teams. They're a bit like us where they sort of lift their game when they're playing those bigger clubs. So you rightly say, I mean, look, if Norwich drops points to Bristol City, and even if West Brom drops points to Leicester, if we pick up the 3 points against Watford, all of a sudden we're looking like we're only 4 points behind West Brom, you know, maybe 3 points behind Norwich with the game in hand. You do start to have a, you know, that would suddenly, you know, ease that door open even further for the playoff conversation. But I think, I guess, as I started the podcast by saying, I think as long as we're in that conversation mathematically going into that last game, I think that's the first aim. And look, if we can overtake one of them in the meantime as well, that would be even better. But yeah, because we've got Coventry midweek next week. So I think if we start with the 3 points against Watford, that would certainly make that game quite a fascinating one. In terms of changes for the lineup, we sort of touched on it before, but do we see a chance, or do we see a possibility that Delap starts this one, or we think maybe it's too soon for him to really get, you know, 60, 70 minutes into the legs?
Yeah, I'd be really surprised to see Delap start. I think that would probably be just maybe a week too soon. A week too soon. I wouldn't be surprised to see him start at Coventry, but I do believe that, you know, this fixture in particular is going to be just that little bit too soon. And I think that that probably would also come from the fact that, you know, given his age, given the fact that it's been a significant layoff, I know that Rossignol won't be wanting to kind of thrust him into the hard yakka too quickly. And I mean, as you say, kind of a little bit further beyond that, that if we are able to, you know, to take 3 points here and 3 points next week at Coventry, well, then all of a sudden he becomes vital for the run in. So it'd be, you know, it'd be very brazen to, you know, to thrust him into the starting lineup. But I do see a world where he comes on and plays, you know, 35 minutes perhaps after half time. And I think that would, you know, if we're able to still be in it or have pinched a goal and, you know, you've got Liam Delap pestering you for the final 35 minutes and being that outlet, you know, it's a very good problem to have. So I don't think he'll start, but I do think he will feature at some point.
Yeah, fair enough. And then a score prediction for this one.
Look, this is a really hard game to predict. I know that, you know, every game in the championship is hard to predict, but it is one of those tricky ones. Well, like I said, they're under new management. They've been travelling okay. Arguably, it's like the most important game of the season for us, but potentially not. I can see us winning this one, and I actually think that we're probably going to do it 2-0. And it would be an incredible feat if we were able to win 2-0 and results do go our way. I think the momentum that you take into next week against Coventry would be remarkable. And I think that's what it requires. If we are going to make the playoffs, we do have to be perfect. And, you know, back-to-back wins with a handsome scoreline in both, I think is the perfect way to kind of build that momentum. So I'm going to back us.
Well, because that's the other interesting aspect is we've sort of ridden off the goal difference as a factor against Norwich. And I say only, but they're only, quote-unquote, 8 goals ahead of us in terms of goal difference. But you think if it was to be a 2 or 3 nil win against Watford and then they suddenly lose by a goal or two against Bristol City, that 8 goals is all of a sudden only, you know, 4 or 5. That's a very achievable difference to overcome. And all of a sudden you're saying, okay, well, maybe we don't need that extra point. We just need to win the game in hand. And all of a sudden we're basically caught up with them. Look, I think it's going to be an interesting game in that sense because it's probably there's that natural conservatism from Rossignol to maybe say, well, let's just get the 3 points. But you also start to conflict that with, well, we do actually need the goals for potentially, you know, wouldn't want to miss out on the playoffs by goal difference. So, yeah, look, I think 2-0, I'm pretty confident as well. I think away from home, our form's terrific. I think this is a game that we'll be up for. I think we'll probably go in unchanged. I think it'd be interesting to see at left back to see what happens with Giles, whether he's fit for this one, whether Coyle's fit for right back. I think Slater, I mean, we haven't really talked about him at all, but I think Slater's been doing a terrific job at right back. So yeah. I don't think there's an urgency for to rush Coyle back by any means. But I wouldn't be surprised if we go in unchanged. And yeah, I'd be really confident in a win in this one.
Yep, let's hope that we're both right and we're celebrating this time on the weekend.
Absolutely. Well, look, thank you for joining me for this one, Logan.
Yeah, my pleasure, Alex. Good to be here.
And thanks, everyone, for listening. And, yeah, hopefully we nab the 3 points in this one and we're back next week to preview the last couple of games of the season. It's really coming up quite quickly now, so not many games left to go. But, yeah, hopefully we're still in that playoff race and hopefully we can take it all the way to the final day. But until next time, come on, City.
You've been listening to the official Hull City Australia podcast, The Tigers Down Under. For more discussion, join us on Facebook at the Hull City AFC Australia Facebook group or follow us on Twitter at Hull City AFC Oz. The music was created by Amber and Black.
City's on fire, we're going higher and higher, there's no turning back 'cause you're out.